Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Muskies Matters with Lakeland University head football coach Colin Bruton. Muskies Matters is a weekly show that gives you, the fans, the opportunity to ask the Lakeland coach questions about the Muskies, football or sports in general, or just seek Coach Bruton's wisdom about life events that are going on. In this week's episode, the coach talks to us about the exciting victory over Aurora last weekend. He tells us who's the smartest coach on the staff, and how did the coach celebrate National Cat Day. Let's find out on Muskies Matters.
So let's welcome back Coach Colin Bruton. Coach, do you have team updates for us?
Just been an exciting week for us, you know, coming off, obviously it was a huge win that we'll talk about, and now just trying to get the guys refocused. You know, we got two home games to close this out, and got a, you know, really good opportunity to win the NAC and kind of accomplish our first goal of getting to the playoffs and things like that. And we're just trying to get the guys focused on taking it week by week and continue to focus on Concordia and not look past them. And the biggest thing for us this week is just making sure there's no emotional letdown. And, you know, it's hard when you have a win of that caliber and the way it happened against Aurora. But we're doing our best to try to get the team back. And I think our veterans, our upperclassmen are doing a good job of kind of setting the tone for us this week. And that's been good to see.
Well, let's talk about that huge victory from last week. One of the most exciting and entertaining games I've seen all season long. So talk to us in particular about those last 5 minutes of the game as the coach of the team.
Yeah, it's exciting. You know, you're trying to keep everyone level, and I think that's the biggest thing. Is just trying to make sure our guys stay engaged, stay focused on just the next play mentality. And you're kind of going back and forth. You know, when we scored to go up for the first time, I think it was 35-31. You felt pretty good, and defensively we had them in a couple long yardage third downs. And on the first one, the quarterback ended up getting out of the pocket scrambling and. Picked up a big first down, and then the second one, they obviously threw the touchdown. I think we have them 3rd and 8, 3rd and 9, and they throw the touchdown pass to put them back ahead. And obviously, your first reaction isn't a positive one, and you're a little upset, and you're down, and they're celebrating. But then I think the next thought as a coach is just trying to get your guys back into the moment. You know, into the moment, thinking, okay, we still got 54 seconds. You know, we got two timeouts. We only need a field goal to tie it, you know. So trying to get the guys kind of thinking ahead. Okay, what's the next situation going to be? And then again, talking to our coaches. So you know, get on the headsets with our offensive coaches and just reminding them of the situation. Reminding them, okay, we got two timeouts. This is where we need to get to have a shot at the field goal. And then letting those guys go and just trying to keep the sidelines positive. I thought one of the really cool things is we had guys on the sidelines that, you know, some upperclassmen and stuff like that. Offensive guys and defensive guys just said, you know, it's okay, we're going to go down and score, you know, and they just kept reiterating that up and down the sidelines and that probably 30 seconds to a minute, you know, in between the extra point and the change of possession, just kind of letting everybody know we're okay, we'll go down and score, we'll take care of it, we'll score. And I think just having that type of leadership, that type of confidence spreads, you know, to everybody else on the team.
I was wondering, watching that game, is that a situation where you get, you know, 20, 30 extra gray hairs as the last minutes are closing out?
Yeah, I've been getting grayer, you know, every year, every day. I feel like every time I get a haircut, I see it falling on the floor, and it's more and more gray. But, yeah, it was, you know, it's one of those ones that it's fun when it's over, and it's fun when it's over when it comes out the right way. But, it's pretty heart-wrenching and things like that. We had a player that went down and got injured, and Mason Ross was starting safety for us, and ended up having to go to the hospital. He had a shoulder dislocation, and he was watching the last couple minutes on his phone. You know, after they got the shoulder back in, he was kind of in recovery, and the nurses ran in because his heart rate got up to about 150 in the hospital, and they weren't real happy with him. We had one of our coaches with them that went with him in the ambulance. But you know, it's one of those games where your heart's racing, and you're trying just to stay calm and. Just kind of stay in the moment. It's really fun when it's over and you come out on top, and I'm sure, you know, when you don't come out on top, it's you know, it's a pretty terrible feeling.
Well, let's talk about that first half for a moment, because you guys literally were moving the ball up and down the field without much resistance, but having trouble three times. You got stopped within the 10-yard line there and turned the ball over on downs. Was there a point that you were thinking that was going to come back to haunt you?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we had three trips in the red zone that we didn't get points. So we went to the half, it was 21-14. We were up, but it honestly felt like we were behind. You know, I felt like all the momentum was on Aurora's side. They were excited to be in the position they were in, because we kind of dominated the first half, and they just kind of hung around. You know, the first possession of the game, we got down to the 1-yard line, didn't get points. But then we're able to recover. We led 14-0. We had another trip in the red zone. We had a chance to go up 21-0, which I think, you know, if we could have got up 21, you know, that would have been really tough. It probably would have taken them out of their game plan a little bit and just gave us a little bit more confidence. And we didn't get points there. They responded two plays later with a 90-yard touchdown run. So all of a sudden, you know, a game that could have been 21-0 was 14-7 really quick. And then we traded scores, and right before the half, we had another chance at 21-14. We were inside the five and didn't get points right before the half. So, you know, they went into the half at 21-14 feeling great about where they were. We went in up 21-14 and didn't feel very good about where we were. You could just feel it. We, you know, we played on our heels the whole second half. They had the momentum, and it felt like we were just trying to hang on. And a lot of it was, you know, our offense has been fantastic all year, but, you know, we haven't been great. The one area we can really improve is inside that 5 to 10 yard line. And I think, you know, absolutely thought, hey, this could be big down the stretch. And, you know, anytime you continue to let a team hang around and stick in the game, you know, you're putting yourself at risk. And it's something we've talked about this week with our guys, and we just got to be better in those situations. We got to get points in the red zone, and we can't waste opportunities like that.
You were talking about the confidence the seniors had on the sideline that you were going to go down and score.
Yep.
Talk about what your confidence level is when you have a quarterback like Michael Whitley. It's 52 seconds left and you're 75 yards away. Are you confident that he's going to pull the game out for you?
We have a ton of confidence in him. You know, we've been in these situations before. We, you know, the first thing we do is every Thursday, we start Thursday practice. You know, the 3 years I've been the head coach, we start with a two-minute situation. That's not uncommon. But we go, our starting defense versus our starting offense, and it's a pretty intense period for us. And to be honest with you, our defense for probably the last month to 6 weeks has really been taking it to our offense in those situations. And our offense has gotten really frustrated because they're used to having all the success, and then we get in this two-minute situation. Our defense has been really good. Obviously, when teams aren't running the ball, we're pretty good defensively, so it's helped us a little bit in those situations. But I think that prepares us. You know, it gets our guys. If nothing else, it just gets them into the routine of the two-minute situation, you know, the logistics of it and that kind of stuff. And then we've been there before. You know, last year, you know, we came from behind to beat Albion in a home game, you know, week two of the season, and we got the ball back. We had to go 88 yards in 31 seconds without a timeout, and we went down the field and got a score. So we've been in these situations, and I think sometimes with Michael, when you – take the thinking part of the game, he's even better. You take the time where there's no time to think about it. Just go and just react and play, and it kind of becomes like backyard football for him. And we got a ton of confidence in him. You know, he took a sack on the first play of the series. So you think about, that's the worst thing you can do in a 2 minute situation. We took a sack and we threw a bad incompletion. It's 3rd and 13, and he made a really good play and a really good throw, kind of leaving the pocket and hit Dez Eddie and for a big gain. And then Dez was able to get out of bounds. And after that, we were kind of just rolling. You know, we felt pretty good once we got ourselves in a situation where we kind of picked up that first down. And we just had some guys make plays in that situation. Dez, like I said, had a couple big catches, and Dez Morris had a big catch, for a first down. And Jody Harrison made a play on a crossing route where he catches the ball about midfield and is able to get himself out of bounds. You know, things like that. We're big, and then I thought our coaches did a really good job of just thinking one call ahead and managing the clock. And I just thought we did a nice job in that situation. But I think our guys have a lot of confidence in that situation. They have confidence because we've done it, we've practiced it, and things like that. And we felt good about it. We had the ball with 6 seconds to go. I think we were on the 4-yard line or 5-yard line, whatever it was. And we told our offense, you guys got two plays. We weren't going to kick a field goal in that situation. We decided at that time, we wanted the ball in our offense's hands to win it or lose it. And those guys we had confidence in, and we were going to let them decide it. And rather than letting the kicking game or our defense in overtime decide it, we wanted our offense to be the ones to win or lose it. And they got the job done, so it was pretty exciting.
You mentioned about Desmond Eddie, how well he played in this game. I would think you've got to be pretty excited about how your rushing attack is looking over the next few years.
Yeah, it's exciting. You know, he's a special player, and he's finally healthy. He was, like I said, he was banged up early in the year with kind of a knee injury, and he's so dynamic with the ball. You know, I think he's scored 15 touchdowns on the season. So he's one of the leaders in the NCAA in touchdowns. Both receiving and rushing, and you feel like every time he touches it, he can score a touchdown, and that's a pretty cool thing to have in a player. I think he's scoring once out of every 6 touches. So it's. And we just keep giving the ball. I think he's had 4 touchdowns last week. He had 4 the week before. So, he's a special player. And, part of that is that our offensive line is really developed as a group. And, the exciting part about that is we graduate just one senior on the offensive line. And then we'll bring back, you know, both of our back. You know, Jada Meeks was a little banged up. He didn't play against Aurora, but we expect to have him back at some point this year. And he'll be a senior next year, and Dez will only be a junior. So it's, you know, we have all these guys coming back, and you know, that really spring the run game, and it's exciting. You know, they're two dynamic backs, and our offensive line continues to get better. So it's a good problem to have. You know, having that type of talent.
You know, the game was so exciting. I thought to myself after it was over, it's kind of disappointing that an Aurora doesn't even have a chance really to get into the national playoffs now, despite the fact that they look really good.
Yeah, they played really well. You know, we saw them on film, and we have a tremendous amount of respect. Coach Ponce has done a great job there. When he took over, you know, 4 years ago, that program was in pretty rough shape, and just the development, the way they've built that program has been really impressive. And you know, I'm sure they're going to be there year after year now. You know, that's going to be kind of one of the games that we look at on the schedule, and it certainly was this year that, you know, we know that game's going to play a part in the conference standings, and we hope that we're able to stay in position to be playing in that type of a game. You know, what made that game so exciting, too, though, was that it was a playoff game. You know, we knew both sides that, hey, if you win this one, you have a really good shot of being that conference representative, and if you lost it, you know, you didn't. You know, and that's what made it so exciting. There was no tomorrow for either team. It was, you know, you had to win it on Saturday. So, you know, while it'd be great to see the NAC eventually get to the point where we're a conference that can have two representatives, but we're not there yet. We're not there from a national recognition standpoint, national respect standpoint, and quite honestly, you know, we're not there. The depth of our conference isn't quite there yet. You know, but I thought Aurora played really, really well, and you know, it took our us playing really, really well to win that football game. You know, it wasn't a game where we could win by playing below average or playing an average football game. We had to play really, really well, and you know, they got the best out of us, and I think we got, you know, their best shot as well. So that made it really exciting.
Who were your offensive, defensive, and special team players of the game?
Yeah, I think offensively, you know, you go back to Witt and you know, the job he did. I think he threw for 450 and had another 80 rushing. I thought he was really good, and then Dez Eddy, I thought, was outstanding. You know, running the ball, catching the ball, just kind of doing whatever we need to. You know, I think he had 100 rushing, 100 receiving, which is just shows how dynamic of an athlete he was. On special teams, I thought Conrad Frost did a great job. He was 5 for 5 on extra points, and then Andrew Cowley came in late in the game and kind of took over the kickoff role late in the game, and Aurora did a good job of kind of game planning for Conrad's kickoffs. We kicked the ball all over the place. We'll kick short, deep, left, right. It looked like they had a pretty good idea where Conrad was going with the ball, so we put Andrew in there, and I thought he did a nice job kicking off. And defensively, unfortunately, we didn't play very well. I don't know if we had a defensive player of the game or anybody that really stood out. You know, we struggled a little bit defensively, and we had some guys that just uncharacteristically didn't play very well. And that was disappointing, but it also allows us an opportunity now to fix it. I think we had a couple weeks where we were playing better defensively, and now, you know, we got to get back to playing with that intensity and playing with that focus. I thought defensively they got us on our heels a little bit and controlled the line of scrimmage for a good portion of that game, and then were able to hit us with some big plays in the passing game. And I think, we just played back on our heels. We weren't attacking, and when we're not attacking defensively, we're not very good. So we got to get back to that kind of attack mentality, and you know, we'll hope we'll get back there this week against Concordia.
This week you take on Concordia. So what are some of the challenges you see that they pose for the team?
Yeah, they got some really dynamic athletes offensively. Lance Moyes is a running back. You know, led our conference in rushing last year as a freshman. Looks like he's been a little banged up. He's been out of the lineup a little bit this year, but looks good again last week on film against Benedictine. He really ran hard, and he's just a really dynamic player. You know, that we're really going to have to be prepared for. He's a good one, and then Ryan Ellison at receiver, kind of the guy they move around. He plays all over the place, and you know, he's a good one. He's really dynamic with the football. He's a kick and punt return guy, really shifty in the open field. You know, and they'll line him up all over. He'll get the ball in the jet sweep game a little bit. In the run game, you know, he'll catch crossing routes. He's a vertical threat, so he's a really talented kid. So, you know, they have some really good weapons that have the ability to kind of be that home run threat, the guys that can score in one play, and that always worries you. And then defensively, they're playing better. You know, I think with the exception of really the Benedictine game last week where they gave up some yards, things like that. They've been pretty good defensively. You know, they do a lot of different things up front. They're twisting and moving and really attacking. So they're attacking gaps and things like that. And you know, that always, you know, it always worries you as a coach when teams have a chance to make big plays and, you know, defensively making those tackles for loss and getting you behind the sticks, and offensively they have a chance to, you know, score on any snap.
The interesting irony of this game, I thought, is that Coach Owry returns for Concordia, and they're celebrating the championship team. Was it 30 years ago or 25 years ago?
Yeah, 20 years ago.
20 years ago. So it kind of, he's going to be recognized during the game there for his previous coaching experience there at Lakeland, now the opposing coach.
Yeah. Coach Owry, you know, has had a great coaching career. So he was at Lakeland for a time in the mid-90s, and his 1997 team went 10-0, and kind of before the playoff structure was what it was now, they were a 10-0 team that got left out of the playoff field. So you know, really you know, a disappointing thing to go undefeated and win all your games and then not be in the playoffs. But they're honoring that team, and that team is, you know, kind of the team that everybody at Lakeland tries to emulate. You know, no other team has gone undefeated 10-0 in a season, and you know, those guys have been really great supporters of our program. So getting that group back to campus is going to be really fun, and they're a fun group. And Coach Ory obviously was a big part of that, so he'll be back, and I know a lot of those guys are looking forward to seeing him. And I'm just getting a chance to spend some time and reminisce and talk about the glory days, and I'm sure they'll have some good stories. You know, that team, you know, it was a 10-0 team. They beat Concordia. Wisconsin obviously was a rival, the Cheese Bowl game we talked about a couple weeks ago. You know, they trailed on that game, I believe it was 33-0, and came back and won that game. So just a really cool story for those guys to reminisce about and talk about. And we're excited to have them back, and obviously Coach Ory is a big part of that. So it's cool that we were able to kind of line this game up for when Concordia was coming up to play, and set it up so that Coach would be here and be allowed to take part in the festivities. I think they're doing kind of a dinner after the game, and I think Coach is going to stay for that, which will be cool, and just kind of allow those guys to have a chance to celebrate, you know, what an accomplishment going 10-0. And, you know, we've been fortunate this year. We got to honor the 1967 team week one. That was a 50-year conference championship anniversary. And then having this 97 team back this year, you know, for the 20-year anniversary, has been really special. And it'll be cool for our players just to be able to see that and meet those guys. And a lot of those guys come to games and they're around the program, but get a chance to really meet a number of those guys and just talk to them about what it was like to go 10-0. It's going to be pretty cool.
Looking at Concordia, Jalen Cox has been a really big playmaker for them on defense. He not only leads the team in sacks, but in tackles as well. What are you seeing in him that's allowing him to be so successful?
Yeah, he's a dynamic player. You know, he's aggressive. He's aggressive to the run fits. He's aggressive in their blitz scheme, and they'll move him around a little bit. You know, he's been, you know, a guy that, you know, as a freshman, we didn't know a ton about coming into the year, obviously, but just a really dynamic athlete. And anytime you have that athletic ability, you have that speed and that combination of strength, that, you know, you become a tough guy to block. And you know, he's a guy, like I said, they're an aggressive defensive front. They'll play some man coverage, which we don't, you know, we don't see a ton of man coverage with our quality of passing offense. But I think we'll see some more man coverage from them. And he's a guy that we're going to have to make sure we know where he's at, you know, with their blitz scheme and things like that. So he's a good one. He's one of a number of pretty good defensive players that have, and it'll be a good test for us.
Well, let's head to fan questions. We start with Tom, who was addressing something you talked about a little earlier. He says, is there a concern of a letdown after winning three games in succession like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's always a concern, you know, trying to get your guys back, and you're dealing with, you know, 18 to 22-year-old kids, and that makes it tough. Or, you know, you hope that there's going to be the focus, and we try to really talk about it and just making sure there's a focus on Concordia and not getting ahead of ourselves and you know, also putting the Aurora game behind us. And we're also a little banged up, you know, so not serious injuries that guys are going to be kept out, but we've had some guys held out of practice this week a little bit just because they got some nagging injuries. And you get to that point of the season where everybody's a little banged up, you know, so we're trying to be smart about that stuff, making sure those guys are ready for Saturday. So that's a bit of a concern, just not having the full group kind of practicing. But it's also where you have to trust on your seniors and your leaders. And we have good leadership in our team, and you got to trust that those guys are going to make sure that we're ready to play. And you know, it kind of starts with those guys. You know, the younger kids always follow the lead of the upperclassmen, and if those kids are ready to play and they're engaged, and you can tell, we'll be able to tell right away on Saturday if we're ready. You know, you'll feel, it's a different feel in the locker room when you're ready to play. It's a different feel during warm-ups. It's a different bounce to our team. And we'll know right away, and it's our job to get those guys ready to play, but it's certainly a concern.
Paul asks, he says, do you feel like you have the depth for next season to stay competitive when you have so many seniors playing key roles this year?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good problem to have. You know, having quality seniors is a good problem. Having guys that have been in our program and have have had the opportunity to develop and are doing good things. You know, that's a good problem to have. And when you are a good program, that this is kind of the evolution of things. You know, you graduate a really good class, and you expect the next group to be ready to step in and play. So, you know, we'll probably have some holes. There'll be some positions that that we'll need to fill in. And you know, I think the secondary is one that we're going to be probably playing some of the younger kids next year. And that's an area that I think, you know, graduating Dante Rowell and Dewan Darling and Mason Ross and, you know, three guys that have been kind of guys back there at least the last couple of years, in Mason's case, and the last 3 or 4 years in Dante and Dewan's case, you know, that'll be a position that we'll have some needs to fill. And I think at receiver, we feel really good about our young receivers, and we still got a number of really talented kids. You know, but losing the quality of receiver that we're losing, you know, there's always a concern, and hopefully some of those guys will be ready to step up. And then obviously losing Michael, a quarterback, you know, he's going to be the guy that we got to figure out a way to replace. And, you know, it's going to be foolish to think we're going to be able to get the same production from a player next year that we've gotten from Michael the last 3 years, just because he's so special. But we feel pretty good about the depth we have at quarterback, and feel like we have a couple guys that we can get ready to play, and it'll be a good competition in the spring and into the fall. And then obviously we'll be recruiting, and we'll be recruiting guys. And you know, when we recruit, we tell guys that, you know, we're never going to recruit and promise you a position, but we are going to promise you an opportunity to compete for a position. And we've played a couple freshmen this year. You know, we started McNeiman Vincent on the defensive line all year. We started Oman Smothers at corner all year. Those two guys have done a great job for us, and we'll have some opportunities for some freshmen to compete. So it's a good problem to have. You know, if you don't have key seniors playing roles, you're probably not doing a very good job of developing your program. So, you know, I think if you look across the country at the teams that are, you know, those top 5, top 10, top 20 teams, they're all playing a lot of seniors in key roles, and it's just part of the way it works.
We have a couple of questions from Jerry. The first one, I'm sure, is intended to get you to step in quicksand, he says. It sounds like you guys on the coaching staff have a lot of intellectual conversations. Who's the smartest coach among you?
Ooh, that's a tough one. We've always said that if we ever got into like a trivia competition, you know, with a team competition, like you'll see at restaurants, things like that, we'd be in really good shape, because we got a number of really intelligent guys. You know, Coach Wellman and Coach Tresky, our two co-offensive coordinators, are both really, really intelligent guys. Coach Wellman's a history buff, and Coach Tresky's got a really vast, just intellectual database, I guess. You know, he can go in a lot of different directions and be really good. You know, I like to think myself in there, you know, I think I've been really good at math and things like that. So I think we got a lot of intelligence in our coaching staff. The other thing I'll say about our coaching staff is we have a lot of different interests. You know, I think sometimes you get staffs that are just hunkered down, and all they think about is football, and they're in the office, you know, 15 or 16 hours a day during the season. We're not like that at all. I want our guys to be have time with their families, have time outside of football for other interests. You know, we're not a staff. We don't meet at all on Sundays, so that's a free day. Not that these guys are out just reading books or reading the encyclopedia or things like that, but I think it helps that our, you know, we have coaches that have a lot of different interests, and you know, Coach Wellman listens to, well, he's got a little bit longer drive than the rest of the coaches, and he listens to history podcasts on the way into the office and different things like that. And you know, Coach Tresky, we all kind of listen to like the Malcolm Gladwell podcast and things like that. So we're listening to stuff like that, and we're just trying to you know, just think about stuff. I think we have a staff that's inquisitive, and you know, the amount of times we Google something because we want to, you know, know about it is pretty high. So I don't know if I got a great answer, but I'd say you know, the three of us are kind of the full time guys. We all feel you know, we're pretty intelligent, so it's a good problem to have.
Maybe we need like coaching staff Jeopardy going on there.
Yeah, we'd feel pretty good. We'd feel like we'd have a pretty good shot, and it'd be a good competition if it was all of us against each other. So,
Jerry would like to know, who do you think is the funniest player on the team?
Ooh, that's a tough one. We got, again, a number of guys that are pretty funny. We got a freshman, Ezekiel Combs. We call him Zeke, and Zeke is one of the more he's just out there. He's a little bit you never know what Zeke is going to say, but he's a pretty funny one, and he gets the guys laughing pretty good. You know, I think Deontay Moses is a pretty funny kid. He's got some pretty good jokes, and you know, our team in general is pretty funny. Michael Hillard's a senior linebacker for us, and he's always been a guy who's been like a real big energy guy for us, and he'll say some stuff that's pretty funny. But just in general, we got a team of guys that are pretty funny, and we're a pretty loose football team, so there's a lot of joking going on, and it's good stuff. But I probably, if I had to pick one, I'd go Zeke just because you never know what Zeke is going to say. You know, it could be really anything, and he's the guy that you'll be out of practice and you know you're in the middle of a drill and he'll come up to you and ask you, you know, he'll be looking at the clouds and asking what that cloud looks like, and you're like, Zeke, what are you doing, man? We're in practice, but he's just that way, and he's kind of got that you know, there's that spirit. He's a real free spirit. So I'm going to go Zeke.
Our next question comes from John, and I apologize about the change in tone of this particular question.
Yeah.
So his question is, how has the loss of Kalen O'Neill inspired the team this season?
Yeah, he's been a big part of what we do. You know, Kalen was a guy who a freshman for us last year that unfortunately passed away in December after the season. And you know, it was something that's really affected our team, and as you would expect. But he's a guy that we tried to do the best to carry on his memory. And I know he's a guy that meant a lot to our guys in the program. He was a backup quarterback and, you know, a kid that was just special, was a guy that athletically was special, would have been a really good player here. But more importantly, was just one of the most supportive players you'll see. You know, he was the first guy when we scored that would be off the sideline, you know, trying to congratulate somebody, and just was always positive, always smiling, just a really special young man. And a guy we miss a lot, and a kid that, you know, we try to just remember, you know, all the time. So we've done a few things. We got a sticker for our helmets with his initials and his number 19, and then we had a lot of talk. We had some guys that wanted to wear 19 this year, and it was one of those situations as a coach that I don't know if there's really a right way to handle it or a wrong way, but we decided to kind of keep that jersey free, and it's still Kalen's number, it's still Kalen's jersey, so. You know, we bring his jersey with us to every game, and we hang it up, and our guys touch it before the game. And he's a big part of still what we do, and he's a guy that, you know, I know our players, they talk about him a lot. You know, they talk about Kalen and just different stories about him, and just try to remember him. And you know, he's close to our hearts, and he's done a big he's still playing a big role in our football program. You know, even though he's not here.
Taylor asks. He says, I am concerned that society is making it wrong to be a man these days, if you get what I mean. However, I am not one to brush off boys just being boys either when it comes to certain behaviors. What are your thoughts?
I'm not really sure where, you know, I guess I'm not sure where Taylor's going with this one. I don't know that it's wrong to be a man. I think maybe what it means to be a man is changing. I think there's a point in time where to be a man you had to be this tough and gruff guy, and I don't think that's the way it is anymore. I certainly don't brush off, you know, boys being boys, as you know, especially when you talk about our guys and you know, 18 to 22 year olds or older. You know, I don't think we're beyond the point of you know, looking at behavior and saying boys will be boys. You know, that doesn't work with me, and you know, so I don't think that's something that we would agree with either. So yeah, I don't really know where exactly Taylor was going with this. I think there's, you know, our job as coaches is to develop guys into men, to develop, you know, young men into men that are ready to go out in society and be productive and be good fathers and be good husbands and things like that. And you know, I don't think those ideals should change. And if they have changed with the people you're around, you know, I don't think that's right, and I wouldn't agree with that.
Mike says, I like list two. How about your top two frozen pizza brands and top two pizza restaurants?
Okay. I'll give you the pizza restaurants pretty easily. I'm originally from Chicago, so I'm a big fan of Chicago, you know, deep dish style pizza. So I'd go Giordano's number one. That's kind of an iconic Chicago chain. And then number two, I'd probably go with like Gino's East, which is another Chicago iconic deep dish pizza joint. I'm a fan of really any deep dish pizza is good with me. There's a good place not too far from here in Fond du Lac that we like going to. It's about a 35-40 minute drive, and that's one of the few places in the area you can really get true Chicago style pizza, so we'll head out there maybe once a month or something like that with the family and get good pizza. But you know, I that's kind of my favorite if I had to pick. There's also I should give a shout out, there's a pizza restaurant in Sheboygan, Faye's Pizza. We go as a staff every Friday. It's kind of our staff lunch, so we'll go out on Fridays as a staff and eat lunch together, and we always go to Faye's. And you know, Faye's Pizza is really good. I had Faye's Pizza last night, as you guys, you know, know from listening to this podcast. We eat a lot of pizza in the Bruton household. So had pizza last night. I'll have pizza for lunch on Friday, and we got Faye's both times. So Faye's Pizza in Sheboygan is really, really good.
We're not giving a top two in frozen pizza, though?
You know, we go, you know, we are probably our number one. We get the Jack's Rising Crust Pizza. It's probably the one we get most often. know, I think there's some frozen pizza, that is kind of more regional. So there's some Chicago style frozen pizza. You can get like a Geno's East pizza and a frozen pizza, but you can't get it, I don't think, nationwide. So it's harder for me to say that just because I think it's a little bit more regional. But I'd go from kind of a national brand. The Jack's Rising Crust makes a pretty solid pie. So I'll go that, you know, kind of as the number one nationally. And then if you're in the Chicago, you know, Chicago area, I think, you know, Reggio's makes a really good frozen pizza. Like I said, I like the Geno's East. Kind of a deep dish Chicago style frozen pizza is really good. I try to stay away from, you know, like the Tombstone and kind of the more generic national brands. They don't do. I'll eat them. I'm not a pizza snob, but I think you can find better ones.
Sean says, solve the biggest mystery of all. Are there aliens from another planet?
Yeah, I think there. Yeah, you know, I think there has to be. I guess I believe there's aliens on another planet. I think there's probably life form somewhere else in this universe. And sometimes I look at my man Zeke, and sometimes I think Zeke may be an alien from another planet because he's out there a little bit. But yeah, I think there's probably aliens somewhere. And yeah, I don't know where they're at or what their motives would be if they ever came to Earth. But you know, I think there probably is some aliens on some other planet, whether it's in our, you know, solar system or, you know, or elsewhere.
Ben would like to know, how much of your Halloween candy that your kids got did you eat?
So far, not too much, but I will say that Colton hid the Halloween candy, so he didn't hide it very well. I was able to find it, but he definitely was being smart and tried to hide his Halloween candy. So we actually got a pretty good selection for the kids in our neighborhood, and we didn't have as many trick-or-treaters as we were expecting, so we got a pretty good overflow of leftover candy. So I've been hammering that pretty good the last couple days. But I'm sure when that's done, I'll be looking for Colton's candy, and hopefully he'll have something good left and not just the leftover stuff, you know, a bunch of Smarties left or some of the other stuff that's not the quality candy. So haven't eaten too much of the kids, but I think they know it's coming, and I think Colton knows that he's got to eat it pretty fast, otherwise he's going to be sharing with Dad.
Coach, I got to say, that's pretty sad when your son's on to you like that.
Yeah, he's pretty sharp. So he knew, and like I said, he didn't hide it very well. He told me he got a full-size candy bar this year, so he was pretty excited about that. One of the houses in the neighborhood was giving out full-size candy bars, so nice. He got a full-size one, and I think he was a little worried that one was going to be eaten, so he did a good job of hiding the stuff.
Amy says, Coach, did you see that story where a guy was told by a judge that he had to write 140 compliments about his ex-girlfriend? I can't even think about 10 good things I would say about my ex.
I did not see that story. 140 is a lot. There's a reason they're your ex, and probably because you don't have 140 good things to say about them. I haven't thought about this in a long time. I guess I've thought about an ex in a long time, but I think that'd probably be a pretty difficult thing to do, to find 10 good things to say. I will say, I think everybody has some good qualities and some redeemable qualities. That's the reason that you were probably dating or with that person or married to that person in the first place. So hopefully you could find something good to say, but 140 seems a little bit extreme. So, I don't think I would have 140. I think 10 would probably be stretching it as well. So I'm going to agree with Amy here.
Diane says, Coach, it was National Cat Day last Sunday. We know you celebrated.
I did not celebrate National Cat Day. I will not celebrate National Cat Day. I think it's a little ridiculous we have a National Cat Day. And I say this in general. It used to be that we had like 7 or 8 quality holidays. You know, you had Christmas, Easter, Thanksgiving, and you know, Memorial Day and Veterans Day and things like that. And now, like, every day is a national something day, and it's getting a little ridiculous. I don't think cats need a day. They get a lot of attention throughout the year. If you're one of those people that for some reason decide you want to live or have a cat, you know, you give your cat attention. I don't think cats need a full day to themselves. But I think it's getting a little ridiculous, this national, you know, blank day. And it's like we're giving props to everything. And it's a little ridiculous. I think National Cat Day should be canceled. I'm gonna start a campaign to get that done. But I did not celebrate National Cat Day and will not be celebrating National Cat Day in the future.
You know, I have to say, though, while I agree with you about the national days, I like national different food days because restaurants give away like free tacos or whatever. I like things like that.
Sure, I think I can get behind that. We can support that. I get, you know, there's like, you know, you see like national like mime day or something like that, or, you know, national clown day, or, you know, it's like all these different things that I have no idea who was so passionate about cats that they decided they had to start a National Cat Day and get this thing approved. And I don't even know what this process looks like. If there's a, you know, if there's a form, if you got to start an online, I don't know, some sort of online campaign and get so many signatures or something like that. I'm not sure how this works, but it's getting a little ridiculous.
Joanne would like to know, are you a big believer in the 10-second kiss rule?
No, I've never heard of the 10-second kiss rule, so I don't think I am a big believer in it. I'm not sure exactly. I'm assuming that entails kissing someone for 10 seconds, which seems a little extreme to me. So I'm not sure exactly what this is about, but I'm going to say no, I'm not a big believer because I have no idea what this is. So if Joanne wants to write in next week and give a more detailed explanation, we can talk about it more in detail, but I don't know that I can say I'm a big believer in something I've never heard of.
And to close out, tell us why it's great to be a Muskie.
It's another great Saturday. We got a home game. Like we talked about, we're honoring the 1997 team, which is going to be really cool and really exciting on campus. And, you know, we got a chance to accomplish our first goal this week. And that means, getting a win, wrapping up at least a share of the NAC title, and then also earning our way into the national playoffs, which is something we've talked about and kind of been an expectation for our program since August 12th and something that we've been building towards. So, you know, it's another day to just take another step for our program and continue building on what we've built on so far. So it's a great day to be a Muskie always.
Excellent. Thanks for joining us this week, Coach.
All right. Thanks, Rob. Appreciate it.
We want to thank Coach Bruton for joining us on Muskies Matters this week. If you have your own questions you'd like to ask the Lakeland coach, please send them to us at ColinBruton@MinorLeagueSportsReport.com. That's ColinBruton@MinorLeagueSportsReport.com. Please have your questions to us by Wednesday evening so we can give the coach a little time to review them before we record the show. I'm Rob Pannier, the managing editor of the Minor League Sports Report, and we'll see you next time on Muskies Matters.